America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network, and each week we provide you with information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and recreational cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry leaders, elected officials, local experts, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear updates from the National Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis markets, personal success stories, and more. It's now time to join America's Cannabis Conversation. Time now for another intriguing tale on the ever-fascinating cannabis trail with W420 Radio Network's lifestyle correspondent, Rich Wolkoff.
Hey, cannabis fans, I don't know if you believe in the afterlife, but I think I found heaven on earth right here at Luma Farms, kind of a boutique grow in Pengrove, California, just about an hour north of San Francisco. And we're here with the director of cultivation, the amazing Enzo. You're the botanist, you're the horticultural guy, you're the guru of weed, man. What do we got going on here? This is phenomenal.
Here we have organically grown, regenerative, sustainable practices, utilizing living soil, working with cover plants and cover crops and organisms, and building soil health.
Yeah, now ultimately. You talk about living soil. What is that all about? Because there's a different. We had Patrick King, the soil king. There's dirt that's dead, and there's soil that's living, and that's what you want, and that's what you have.
Absolutely. Living soil has to do with organisms and the communities of organisms that are in the soil, earthworms and other plant species. Mm-hmm. Living soil utilizes these organisms to cycle the nutrients instead of relying on synthetic plant-available soluble fertilizer. Mm-hmm. These organisms in the living soil, which makes living soil, actually help feed the plants.
So now you guys are making hash oil, rosin. Tell me a little bit about rosin, which a lot of people may not even know about.
Rosin is made by heat and pressure being applied to bubble hash. It is the most refined concentrate made solventlessly that you can create.
Yeah. And about the soil, how key is it? I mean, there's commercial soils, there's, you know, so-called organic soils, but what are you looking for? What are some of the key considerations when you create the foundation for your plants?
Yeah, you want to build soil with quality inputs. You want to have foresight into drainage and moisture retention and all the different components that will allow your soil to function correctly. The best soil is native soil, is revitalizing native soil. And that's essentially what we're doing here.
So in your soil, we're talking about what you put into it supplement it or give it added nutrients?
So constantly paying attention to the phase of the plant's life. We add organic amendments, organic matter in the form of different plants.
Mm-hmm. And I know you told me it's not just the plant in the raised bed. Their roots are going deep, so it's not like a planter, because that's going to inhibit the growth.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, here in the Petaluma Gap where we are at in Pengrove, we're on adobe, and I understand it to be ancient seabed, so highly mineralized, but also very compact. So that plays into terroir. Mm-hmm. It's one of the factors that you may or may not be able to have a say in. Mm-hmm. Is the composition of this native soil.
So how many different varieties do you have? And are they from clones, from seed? What's the genesis?
Right now we have over 70 varieties. That is because we are hunting through some to find something special. Most everything here is from clone, but there was some seeds grown and clones taken from them to be tested.
Okay, what's your fave and what's your go-to?
My fave is actually one that I created a couple years ago called Lemon Limes, and it's extremely potent, and it leaves you It leaves you wondering where you are.
In a good way.
In a good way.
I got to ask you, some people are enamored with the THC.
Yes.
And Bob Stefano from Villa Paradiso up in, he's one of the Humboldt original high five guys,
yeah.
said to me, don't get caught up in THC. That's like telling me a Dodge Charger is a better car than a Ferrari.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are enamored with, oh, look, I got 30% THC. I love that.
It's very short-sighted.
Yeah, it's not the full spectrum. The entourage is more important, right?
Absolutely. You will not experience all that the plant has to offer if you're just going for a product with a high THC.
Yeah.
A lot of those labs, too, are deceiving. So as a consumer, you may not be really getting what you're after,
yeah.
you know, and you're being sold kind of an effect with a ceiling, you know. It's going to kind of reach a point and you're never going to get past that.
Well, again, it's not just about horsepower, right? And THC is the metaphor for the horsepower of the plant, but there's much more to it. So you're looking to create something that gives you maybe the nice buzz, a certain euphoric full spectrum experience of the plant, whether it's medicinal, recreational, or whatever.
A lot of the focus lately has been on finding genetics that have very unique flavors, very profound exotic flavors. When making hash and rosin, that's kind of the focus. People aren't really thinking about the THC percentage as much in that community mm-hmm. or demographic. They are focused on the enjoyment of the flavor.
And with Enzo, the director of cultivation at Luma Farms here in Pengrove, California, I'm Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network, and we'll be right back. Hey, we're returning to the scene of the farm, Luma Farms in Pengrove, California. I'm Rich Walkoff, along with Enzo, the director of cultivation, and Curtis Wall, the founder of Luma Farms. It's an amazing biodynamic organic grow, and we were here a few months ago, and it was close to harvest time. So it was the peak of the colas and the flowers, and now it's approaching winter time. What's going on? You've been working your tails off to create this product, fresh frozen, I'm hearing about for the first time. What's that all about?
Fresh frozen weed is capturing the resin in its quote-unquote live state as it was growing on the plant without not letting it have the opportunity to dry. So you're freezing the plant while it's still green, while it's still got moisture in it, and it's essentially still alive, and you're putting it into a frozen state to capture the essences, the terpenes, the cannabinoids, just as they were during the growth stages.
Yeah, and oxygen is the enemy, right? You don't want oxygen around it. You don't want light around it after you harvest. So tell me a little bit about that, Curtis, if you would.
Yeah, you definitely don't want, especially when you're drying cannabis in its dry form, you definitely don't want any light in there. It can degrade the terpenes and cannabinoids and all those different things. With fresh frozen, it goes right into a big bin, and it goes into the freezer, and it doesn't see any light until yeah. it gets to the extractor.
Now, how long do you have to keep it like that?
You have about 20 minutes to get it into the freezer from harvest before degradation sets in. As far as length of time in the freezer, if you have your parameters set correctly, you could live in the freezer for a couple years.
Wow. But what is your general timeline?
We would love to get it to the consumer as fast as possible. There's just all the hurdles of the regulations.
Now, well, you're doing it as a commercial, kind of a boutique grow, because you have the high end. It's the cleanest. You don't use any of the chemicals. It's living soil, as you commonly talk about. But what about a home grow? I mean, I'm just an average Joe, and I got a few plants, and I want to cure. I want to dry. I want to cure and process. What are some of the tips that you could pass along as the expert growers?
I would say some great tips are put it in a dark room, hang it upside down, get a low airflow around it, not direct airflow, 60% humidity, 60 degrees temperature, and about 14 days.
Oh, good. I've done all those things. And we had a big storm in Northern California a few weeks ago, and my home grow, those buds were just falling over.
Oh,
they were so wet. They had just soaked up all the rain, with 8 inches of rain. And thankfully, after 2 weeks with dehumidifiers and fans and everything, things have dried, and we're in the next phase of, now going to trim and jar them up. And then aerating in jars. What do you do in a commercial enterprise like this, even though, as I say, it's kind of boutique because you're not doing massive quantities, although it's a healthy number.
Yeah.
And then what would you do residentially or, the home grow?
So the home grow, I would treat every jar as an environment, and I would allow the gases, things off-gassing to build up in that jar. And then every other day I would burp it for 30 to 45 minutes until you reach a consistency, a moisture consistency that you really like.
Sure. Yeah. Now you guys have a specialty. You're not just growing great weed, and if we could bring in some of these beauties, you have a variety of crops. These are 8 samples, right? And what are you growing? And then not just for the flowers, which are magnificent, but you have something else going on that is it takes you to a whole nother level. So I'll defer to the founder here, Curtis.
Yeah, so we grow genetics that are supposed to be good for making hash. Things that are the customer's really going to want. They like very fruity flavors, mm-hmm. Desserts, things like that. Anything that's super unique and special that they can't find at any other place. So that's pretty much what we're looking for in our genetic selection for our outdoor.
Okay, so when you make hash, now Enzo told us a little bit about this in our first conversation, but part two, maybe you can expand upon it. Tell us why what you do is so much better and why you do what you do.
Well, what we do is we grow cannabis in what we believe is the best way possible. And then we work with the best people in our industry and in our space to make the hash and the rosin. And those people take it from the freezer and they bring it into a cold room. It then goes into a washing machine. It could be hand stirred or it could be machine stirred depending on the infrastructure setup. They then pour that solution through a set of filters, catching the different size glands through all those different filters. Now you take the glands that have been caught in those filters and you put them into a freeze dryer. You effectively dry the glands, remove the moisture without letting them oxidize, without the presence of oxygen, because there's a vacuum on this freeze dryer. So now you pull out your resin and it's in a pristine state. It's white, it hasn't oxidized, it's all heads. And now you have the raw material to press rosin. Rosin is the refinement of hash. It is hash pressed through more filtration with heat and pressure.
Wow, wow. So if I hear something about diamonds and honey.
So diamonds are made just like in the environment and in the earth, heat and pressure. In the solventless world, you would put rosin into a jar and you would seal it and you would let that jar reach room temperature. That's the heat. The pressure is the seal and you not breaking the seal and allowing those gases to build into that. So that's how we make solventless diamonds. How you make the BHO ones, that's a whole nother process that we don't really partake
in. Yeah, solvents are harsh, sometimes dangerous chemicals, but they're used in the process in most commercial hash manufacturing. You guys don't do that, and you tell me why, please.
We believe in healthy consumption. We grow in the what we believe is the healthiest way to grow to produce the best produce for human consumption and the impact on the earth. When you use a thing like butane or any of those harsh volatile solvents to extract from a plant, it doesn't go hand in hand with the style of cultivation and the life that we like to live, you know, the healthy lifestyle.
You know, state of California and many states have very stringent regulations. So how is that monitored? And are you get that good seal of approval? Do you get that organic, you know, butane-free tag on it when you create your rosin and such?
No, they don't offer anything like that. We couldn't even use the word organic on any of our packaging.
That's
up to
unfortunate,
this day.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's bonkers. I think that there's something coming along through the pipeline where they're going to start allowing us to use the word organic.
Yeah, but think about it. Your process is more laborious and probably more costly and better. The other one is cheaper and more, you know, volume oriented. So if the consumer is left in the dark, I mean, where's the win on that? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, for the longest time, I was also left in the dark, you know, kind of being new to the space and seeing the different consistencies and colors that I've never really seen before, because you're able to really filter out a lot of the you know, darker sort of
impurities,
you know, impurities yeah, in the yeah. in the flower and in the product. So for me, going to the dispensary, I was like, oh, this is great, you know. But then it's over the past 2-3 years when I've only been smoking solventless strictly, I've really realized the difference going back, trying some of this, you know, sauce or diamonds or
right.
It hurts my throat.
Right.
And I'm not just saying that.
No, I bet. It's sort of like when you get black market weed where you don't know what chemicals were put in to the process of growing it. Whereas if you get it from a dispensary, you know it's authenticated in terms of that aspect of it. But the fact that they don't distinguish between what you're doing and the chemical infused or created hash and rosin is really baffling, as I say. So guys, I tried that and man, it is freaking awesome. And it's smooth, it's clean. It's a really sweet high, and I just think you guys are killing it. By the way, we're in a studio that will rival anything I've ever been in. I mean, this is like Hollywood comes to Northern California, man. This is awesome. You've got a state-of-the-art, everything going on, and I don't know about many grows that have a setup like you do here at Luma Farms. So tell me about what are we all about here?
Yeah, so this is Luma Studio, Luma Network. We're trying to, first and foremost, promote our brand, Luma. We're trying to, you know, think long-term, 3 to 5 years. Once cannabis goes national, we're able to cross state lines and, you know, sell to consumers everywhere. We want to make sure that, you know, we're already in their hearts and minds.
Yeah, so you can create content as well as growing the great stuff. And then you could tell your story like you are here on the America's Cannabis Conversation. We're giving you a forum because I love your stuff and you guys are awesome. So Enzo, when you come into a studio like this and you get a chance to tell your tale, I mean, what are some of the secrets that you can reveal that we haven't discussed about your process of harvesting, curing, processing, and the like?
Genetic selection, maintaining the nursery space, mother rooms, the great amount of effort that goes into weathering the storms. Yeah. Speaking of storms, we just had a hell of a storm recently, which we weathered through harvest. Just the culmination of effort that goes into literally every layer. No shortcuts taken. We strive to do our best at every stage. We really believe and care about everything that we do here.
Yeah, now obviously I could tell, I could see it, I could taste it. But when you grow a few hundred plants versus these commercial grows, these massive commercial grows that may be growing thousands, differentiate. Tell me what's the difference between how you process, cure, and deliver your flowers and hash and rosin and the like versus the massive like agribusiness growth.
I'd put it in one word, care. We take the care and the thoughtfulness and the consideration to do every step right. And we have a small enough, even though it's not, you know, it's a sizable grow that we have here. It's small enough to pay attention to everything. Things don't get overlooked. We're not spread so thin that we have to cut corners. These are the things you see when you scale up. You lose craft when you scale because it's hard to delegate craft. It's hard to delegate what one person does to an army of employees.
Right. That's a great word, the craft. And I refer to you guys as kind of the boutique, well, similar vein. In
absolutely.
That it's like you're handcrafted, you're monitoring every plant, every cola versus these massive machine-hewn enterprises.
We are harvesting by hand. We're bucking by hand. We're doing all this process very intimately.
Yeah.
One question that you had asked earlier was how does someone cure on small scale versus large scale? On a small scale, I was saying, you know, in jars and burping it every 45 minutes, every other day till you're at the right moisture. Large scale, we can't put that much weed in that many jars. It's not cost efficient or space efficient or labor efficient.
Sure.
And so what we have to do is we have to create an environment, a huge environment that is like a jar. And we treat the huge environment like a jar.
Right. Well, that's why your stuff is so awesome.
That's one part of it.
Great stuff, guys. You've only been around a few years, but I think the best is yet to come. Congrats on all your successes on the America's Cannabis Conversation. We're with Enzo and Curtis Wall here at Luma Farms in Pengrove, California on the W420 Radio Network.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com. Are you interested in learning more about cannabis? Have you thought about starting your own cannabis business but don't know how? If so, we invite you to join the Cannabis Conversation with other people like you who are looking at the exciting opportunities in this exploding business. Listen to America's Cannabis Conversation. You'll hear from industry experts and get insights into the cannabis industry. For archived shows and for more information, log on to americascannabisconversation.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It's a pleasure to introduce Penny Cook, Acting Chief Operating Officer and Advisor of Lemon Haze. Lemon Haze is a B2B cannabis events company. Penny, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great, Chase. Happy to be here.
We're really happy to have you. I always like to start at the beginning. Can you tell me a little bit about your life? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school?
Oh, sure. So I actually grew up in Philadelphia. I'm an East Coaster at heart.
Love it.
I went to school at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. And after I graduated, I realized I could be unemployed in the city of my choice and decided to get in my car with one of my college roommates. And we drove around the country for a month and ended up in Seattle. And I had never lived on the West Coast. I thought it would be a great adventure for 6 months or so. And I had planned to go back to the East Coast and, you know, in either Boston or DC and get a real job like everybody else. And that was over 25 years ago, and I'm still here in Seattle.
Love it. That month sounds like it was probably a pretty pivotal month in your life.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I can't imagine going back and doing that now, but really seeing the whole country and having some time to really think about what was next after college was great. And then ending up in a place like where I really found, I found community and I found industry and learned about the whole startup culture that the West Coast has. And I really, you know, I became part of it and I fell in love with it. And I think that's a lot of what feeds how Seattle has been in the forefront of the cannabis industry and how I got into that in the first place.
I was going to ask you, did you ever imagine you would be in this industry?
Not at all. Not at all.
And no one ever does. No one ever does.
Right. I mean, I think growing up and through college, I was part of, you know, the generation that was fed the stigma that marijuana was a drug and you should stay away from it. And thank goodness I'm in a forward-thinking place where I really got to be re-educated pretty quickly in understanding that it's a great tool for wellness.
Absolutely. We're going to go in into all the benefits. And I just want to mention really quick to our listeners that you also are the chief operating officer at Zonin. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Zonin CBD. Yep. Zonin CBD is athlete founded. So we are, we're part of a professional athlete network that produces CBD products for athletes and active adults to perform better, to recover more quickly, to gain more mental focus, and really promote an overall healthy, active lifestyle, which is something that, you know, cannabinoids are amazing things. And we're really at the very beginning of learning what cannabinoids can do to help promote wellness in our bodies. And there's a lot to be said for cannabinoids like CBD and THC, helping us relax and sleep. But there's a lot of research going on now, and a lot of people are taking this to actually perform better during their day. You know,
The NFL is actively right now trying to pursue that research.
Yep.
If I got that correct. Yeah. And I'm really happy about that. And I noticed you serve on the Board of Commissioners for Seattle Sports. Is that directly related to your work?
So I did. I'm not a commissioner at this point. But no, those were all, that was kind of a coincidence in my professional career, but it is where I met a lot of the folks that I work with now for Zonin CBD and a lot of the contacts that are relevant to Lemon Haze as well. And, you know, it's great to be part of organizations that promote community and healthy lifestyles. And that's one of the reasons why I was so passionate about being part of the Seattle Sports Commission, because it was not just professional sports, but it's sports going all the way down to getting youth involved, getting communities involved. How do you build positive community around things that make people healthy. And there's so much in common that that has with the cannabis community.
Absolutely. And tell us about Lemon Haze. I find it very interesting. Lemon Haze provides first class events for businesses in the cannabis industry. And you have several different kinds of events. Can you tell us a little more about the mission of Lemon Haze? And maybe we could go one by one about the events you guys do.
Sure. So our mission is really to help the cannabis industry grow, and by providing connections that haven't been made available to the cannabis industry through, you know, normal means.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of, you know, trade shows are great and they help people get a sense of the larger picture of what's out there, we throw very small boutique focused events that take that trade show and really boil it down to the people who are there are the people who need to meet each other to grow their businesses in the industry. So for example, our virtual upfronts, we connect brands and buyers in an online kind of speed dating format where we get, you know, a whole bunch of retailers to log on and a whole bunch of brands buy into it. And we set up meetings one after another at a 15-minute clip where they all get to meet each other. So there's no, you know, kind of back and forth. When are we going to talk? The brands driving around to different retailers or trying to get in touch with the buyers. We put them all in one virtual spot where from the comfort of their own store or their own production facility, they can meet. And the outcomes of those, we see lots more business going on than leaving everybody on their own to try and connect and get those products in retailers and then in consumers' hands.
That's so necessary. And especially with the ongoing COVID stuff. I mean, this is so valuable. It's direct, it's effective. I think very necessary. And I'm sure so many good business partnerships happen out of that. And you guys also have bud tender parties.
We do. Our bud tenders' first events are kind of the bread and butter of who Lemon Haze is. It's where we started throwing events, and it's for the most important people in the cannabis industry, really are the bud tenders. And making them the VIPs at these events, it really is recognizing where the most important decision-making happens in cannabis, and it's at the counter where the consumer is making that purchase. So we throw these parties where hundreds of bud tenders show up, because we're connected to them and we have ways to get to them in every region that we're in the country. And they show up at these great parties. There's food and there's drink. And then all of the brands that we have in our network come and set up booths where there's information and there's engagement and fun things for them to do. And through our surveys, we understand that bud tenders are over 70% more likely to recommend a product that they were educated about at one of these events than they are to recommend something else at the counter with a consumer.
Now, what is your vetting process? Like if a listener is part of a company and is like, oh, I want to be there, can people just go to your website and apply or contact you? How does this process work?
Oh, sure. So for bud tenders, we actually validate employment at a retailer. So we guarantee to all the brands who come, who buy sponsorship packages there, that all of the bud tenders that they meet are current active bud tenders. And so we just have a confirmation process on the back end. So if you're a bud tender and you want to RSVP for one of those events on our site, you go in through the process, you submit your credentials, you get approved, and then you get a ticket. It's free for all bud tenders.
That is an amazing service.
Yep. And for brands, you know, you need to have good products and be relevant in that market. And we love to help brands that are just starting out. We love to connect with women and people of color owned brands. And we love to connect with the brands out there who are also well established and well loved. All of those things are really relevant to the consumer, and the bud tenders really love to connect with all of them. So anybody who's out there who is putting product in their local cannabis retailers really should be at one of these bud tender parties to connect with bud tenders. And they really get to talk to depending on the size of the event, 200 to 500 bud tenders in one evening.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's really big.
Yeah. And Chase, more than anything, every one of these events that we throw also is really fun. Everybody has an amazing time. I mean, if not just for the business aspect of it, but people come back because it's just an amazing time to be had. I mean, it's something that I think is really essential to the industry, that we all have fun doing what it is that we do. And so, you know, there's food, there's music, there's consumption, and really networking with the people who care about things you do. And it's always an amazing crowd. And the bud tenders, I have to say, are the most fun people to throw a party for.
I believe that. And do you know when the next one is? Is there something lined up?
Actually, yep. The next bud tender party is tomorrow night in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
Yep. So on February 4th, and then on February 6th, there's a bud tender party in Seattle, Washington. And then in 2 weeks, starting on February 16th, there are bud tender parties in Oakland, California and San Diego, California. And I would say check the website for dates, because we're adding more all the time. We're going to be all over the country this year.
Can you let our listeners know the website to go to check the schedule?
Oh, sure. It's lemonhaze.com. So lemon, like the fruit, haze.com.
And what is the story behind the name? Is there a story behind the name?
There's really not that much of a story. It's the name of a strain that everyone in the company was a fan of. And we love to lean into the lemon part of it. It's kind of, it's a little kitschy and fun, and it appears at every one of our events. And that's it. It's connected to the industry, and it kind of showcases that fun, quirky feeling that we have at all of our events.
The fact you found a strain that everyone agreed upon, that right? is a feat. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I know you guys had your first, you guys do executive golf classics. You had your first one in October. How did that go?
Yeah, actually we ran a series of them in 2021, and we were pleased and amazed at the response to them. So our founder, Brian Yager, is and always has been an avid golfer. And he's also really astute at listening to what this market needs and responding to it. So in the middle of the pandemic, there wasn't much that we could do in terms of events in person. And something that he was doing to stay connected to the Cannabis Network was he would go golfing with people, because it's outdoors, you can stay safely socially distanced. And more executives were contacting him saying, hey, I want to golf with you. I want to talk to you too. It was a place to network. It was a place to come together with other people. People were starting to request other people to golf with him. And then sponsors were like, hey, how much can I pay to get in and buy you guys a round of golf, or buy you guys a round of drinks? And all of a sudden this turned into an event. Hey, let's invite these executives who want to be part of this. And then sponsors can come in and network with them. And so
how big are these groups?
So for a whole tournament at this point, we have between 120 and 140 golfers. And those are all, those are mostly made up of brand executives, both C-suite executives, VPs, and directors from cannabis brands and some ancillaries as well.
Do you feel comfortable mentioning some of the brands that have participated?
Oh, sure. I mean, really, I would say all the big national names you could think of. We've had people from Cookies and Cresco Labs, GTI, Wild, Curaleaf. And then as we go regionally, we also are able to include, and it's most important to us, to include the local brands, that are up and coming, brands that need to be connected, and also some brands that are already established regionally. So we like to have a good mix of the MSOs, the big national brands, and what's happening regionally, because we really honor that as we go into a city or a region with these events. And then it's really valuable for all these ancillary sponsors to come in and meet these people. They're, you know, it's a way to get into the cannabis business for anybody who's either starting a company and is new and needs to connect. Where do I connect with the people I need to talk to? Come to our event and you'll see a concentrated audience of those executives who are the decision makers that you need to connect with. And we're seeing more and more mainstream companies who know that a valuable part of their business is going to be in cannabis. And they're starting to come to these events, pay to be sponsors at these events, to connect with these executives, to open up that part of their business. Healthcare companies, accounting companies, legal companies, architectural companies, who have all been part of the mainstream, who are now seeing cannabis, now seeing the value in being part of the cannabis industry, which is something that we are really pushing to mainstream the entire industry as we know it absolutely deserves to be.
It's slowly getting there. Actually, we're at the launching point now where everyone's kind of all in based on, you know, cannabis is money at this point and the predictions of what's going to be coming in. And it does impact almost every industry. For these events, do you have certain cities you guys always hit, or are you open to new cities? How does that work?
So we are expanding our map around the country every year that we do this. Last year was the first year in golf tournaments, and we tried to hit all of the major metro areas right now where cannabis is legalized and becoming a big business. We've expanded the map this year, and we're already talking about our 2023 season and expanding the map even further. So we're really excited to see the business itself expanding and then bringing our events out there to help connect all the pieces of that business to help it grow everywhere.
Is there any thoughts of going global?
We've talked about it. We want to make sure that we're taking care of everyone who's in our network. We don't want to grow too fast, but we will be expanding quite a bit as we're able to.
And I also want to mention, you guys also do cannabis conventions. Are those also listed on your website or?
So we have done cannabis conventions in the past. We've done pretty big conventions, and there are other conventions that are out there. But really where we're focused right now are these boutique, smaller events where the people who need to meet each other are the people at the event. And you're not guessing if somebody's walking by your booth, if they're the decision maker at a company, or if you need to talk to them. We're focused on putting together these small events that if you show up, the target audience that you're looking for is who we're putting in front of you.
Such a valuable, important, you're building relationships that need to happen. It's all about relationships, and Lemon Haze is really doing a great job at doing the networking, building these relationships for people. As a woman in the industry, do you have any advice for women in the industry?
Sure. You know, it's really unique to be in a leadership position like this, because I've been in technology. I've been in consumer packaged goods, and I've been in consulting. And, in every industry, you don't find an overwhelming number of women in leadership positions. And we have the same challenges here in cannabis, I would say, but it really does feel like the door is a little bit more open in cannabis than it is in other industries. And Chase, it's something that we also pay close attention to. So we've gotten a lot of feedback about our golf tournaments, for example, that more, you know, people have the perception that more men golf than women do. And really what we found is that there are more male executives out there who were able to invite to these golf tournaments than women executives that we're finding. So what we've done is we have purposefully created a network where we're finding the women executives and we're finding the people of color executives and promoting these companies that they're part of to get them into our events, to create that diversity and to create a better leadership path in the cannabis industry. It's something that we understand is really important, and we know it resonates all the way through the industry to the bud tenders and to the consumers. It creates a better experience all around. So, you know, I'm particularly sensitive to that being a woman in leadership in cannabis. And something that we want to do is we want to make sure that that door is wide open for all opportunities.
Fantastic that you guys are taking the time to make sure that's happening.
Absolutely. It's really important to us. And we know that it's important in the ultimate success of the industry.
Absolutely. Well, Penny, I can't believe this. Our time is out. I want to really thank you for being here. If you missed any of this great interview with Penny Cook, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. And we'll be right back.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to America's Cannabis Conversation. I'm your host, David Katzmeier. We have a very special guest with us today, Larry Sharp. Larry Sharp is an independent candidate for governor of New York, representing the Libertarian Party. He has endorsements from Andrew Yang's Forward Party and United NY. He has already registered an uptrend in polling data, and the momentum continues. You can find out more about Mr. Sharp's campaign at LarrySharp.com. Sharp is spelled with an E on the end, so that's LarrySharp.com. Our conversation on cannabis today will be a rich one, as cannabis has been in the forefront of state legislation and a boom to many economies. New York State's laws have gone through changes recently with legalization of recreational marijuana for adults 21 and older. This moves New York towards the creation of a potential $4.2 billion industry that could become one of the nation's largest markets. That's why we are glad that Larry Sharp agreed to come onto the program to talk about what this could mean to New Yorkers now and moving forward, and maybe take a review of how things have been done so far as we're getting here. Joining me also on the conversation is my colleague and occasional co-host, Mitchell Rabin of A Better World Media. Mitchell hosts his own program called A Better World on Manhattan TV and his widely circulated podcasts, all of which you can find at abetterworld.net. So, dear listeners, my co-host Mitchell Rabin and I welcome New York gubernatorial candidate Larry Sharp to the program. Mr. Sharp, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, to begin, Mitchell, I know that you're very much involved with the cannabis changes that have been going on, and I'm sure you have some questions for our guest, Larry Sharp, today. So why don't you begin, introduce yourself, and begin with the conversation and some questions. Mitchell?
Okay, Dave. Thanks very much. The name, correction, is Mitchell Cannabis Rabin, by the way. Larry, you said something prior to our getting on the air that you are pleased that New York State is getting to where it is, that it is progressing along the path, and you're grateful for that, but you also think it's doing it all wrong, if I may quote. So if you would, enlighten our audience. Let us know. What is it that you think needs to be done from what is being done currently?
When I ran in 2018, I wanted to legalize cannabis in a very specific way. I was kind of joking, but I wasn't. I was out in Western New York when I was having this question, and I said, we should regulate cannabis like onions. That's what I said, because in Western New York, we grow onions. So I thought, you know what? That's how we should regulate it, like a plant. Just make it 18 years or older to purchase it at retail. Otherwise, it's a plant. Just take whatever their rules are for onions or carrots, scratch out the word carrot, write the word cannabis, law done. That is what I wanted to do. And you may think I'm joking. I'm actually not. And the reason why I say that is, it is a plant. What we've done is we've made it to where it isn't really going to help New York the way it could. Imagine if we actually did what I said. Now all of a sudden local farmers can grow craft grows. We would support local small businesses and local small farmers. Will that work in New York State? We already have an example of that working, and that is when we decided to deregulate a little bit when it came to wine and beer. And we had a huge increase in breweries and wineries across New York State. Entrepreneurism came up. People were able to grow their own businesses and go to their jobs. Why shouldn't farmers be able to create craft grows? We could do that. With our new way of doing it now, we can't do that. There's a horrible license. The license will cost about $250,000. What small farmer can swing that? They can't. We've just pushed all the small farmers out. Not just that. If you actually have it to where it's like a plant, there are lots of New Yorkers who have constant pain, and they're not able to hang out with their family and friends and live their best life. Well, what's their option? Option number one is they use an opioid. Opioids are 80% of the reason why we have addicts right now, because of prescription opioids. It is increasing our addiction problems. We have cannabis products. A bunch of that will go down. But not just that. Some people can't afford it. Guess what? Grow your medicine in your backyard if you need to. I don't mind. Let's have some happy New Yorkers. What I would have happen to me often is somebody would come by and say, hey, Larry Sharp, I hope you win. And I'd say, why? This would almost always be an older woman. You say, because I have chronic pain. And right now, I have to send my son or my daughter to go out and buy my cannabis. I don't want them going to jail. So the other option is suffer. That's not a good answer. I'm not okay with that. But I'm still not done. I had a joke, which was like the Obama joke for Obamacare. He said, if you like your doctor, keep your doctor. What I said, if you like your dealer, keep your dealer. If your dealer can grow whatever they want, they simply go down to the office and say, hey, I want to have an LLC. And now they become the same dealer. They just pay their taxes now. So we get regular taxes. You keep your same dealer. Everybody's happy. Addicts now also because, as you know, cannabis also helps people who are withdrawing, dealing with withdrawing symptoms. Now that begins to go away. We've lost those four for this new style in New York State, which has an Office of Cannabis Management. How insanely stupid is that concept? Cannabis has been in the black market for at least 100 years in the United States, and the exact number of deaths from cannabis are zero. So now that we're going to make it legal, now we have to have a regulatory body? How dumb is that? Right? We already have a regulatory body for vegetables. Use that same regulatory body for cannabis. No need to add extra one. Why would you add an extra one? For only one reason. So you can ensure that all the licensing can go to your friends. This is a corruption situation. It's a way that we can have patronage and people who will give their friends the licenses, and the license will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the people who will make money on this will be large real estate companies and permanent capital. That's who will make money in my state, not the farmers, not the people who need pain, not the people who are small-time dealers, not addicts. The people who make money are cronies, large real estate companies, and permanent capital. That's why I'm against it.
We used to have an expression, tell it like it is. And man, that is that is straight, simple talk, and it puts so much in a nutshell. Mitchell, I want to come back to you in a second, but I just wanted to say, you succinctly put into a brief message what so many people have been saying. Let me bring up the case in California. A lot of growers, the number one complaint amongst them all is that by the time they get done with paying regulation fees and taxes, that they are barely eking out a margin. And some of them are considering if they're even going to stay. But when you talk about the simple solutions that you're presenting here, man, that cuts all through that.
Not only does it cut through, but there's no harm, right? If this was a harmful substance, then I could see why somebody would be afraid. But we have literally a century of data, and it is not a harmful substance. So there is no requirement for it, is my point, right? So you're gaining nothing by creating the regulation, and you're saving nothing by not having it. There's no benefit being except for cronyism. And I'll go one step further, though. It also ensures there will be a black market, and that's also the goal, because creating a black market ensures government can have law enforcement, which includes fines, fees, and civil asset forfeiture. Not only that, they can now save us. This is the government wants this. The government does very well. Whatever government creates policies, It always supports two groups of people, the very wealthy and the black market. Those are the two it always supports. The very wealthy give it money, and the black market allows to control the weak. So that's why they always do it. And if you look in California, as you said, the black market is still strong. If you remember this story, I'm sure you remember it. There's a bunch of Northern Californian farmers who are on the black market, you know, creating cannabis products. So the larger legal people went to the cops and said, hey, these black market guys, they're taking our money. They're do something. So, of course, California, the smart thing is that, you know what? Let's lower taxes and lower regulations so that everybody can be fair. No, I'm kidding. Of course, they didn't do that. They never do that. What they did instead was they sent the cops to go in to seize everything, and then they paid a vendor to burn the product. That's what we're doing.
And then
they
got their friends to gather around the burning.
Yeah, well, because their cronies were the companies who burn it. So their cronies got government contracts to burn the product.
Yes, and the black market's still going strong over in California because they're underselling the growers without having to pay regulation and taxation and everything like that. So all these points are corroborated by so many people who have come onto the program, and simple solutions are always the best. Mitchell, what do you think?
Yes, well, what can I say? You're very sharp. You're really very sharp.
Every day.
You have hit the nail on the head of understanding the larger political arc, if you will, of the way government works, or I should say dysfunctions on behalf of the people, which is really hardly at all. So I love your democratization, if you will, of the potential business. I love the idea of everyone growing their own medicine in their own windowsill, as it may be, or backyard. Mm-hmm. That's the way things have always been with all herbs. Why in the world should this be an exception?
Recently, all the issues in Manhattan have nothing to do with cannabis. Recently, what they have to do is with the lockdowns and the unhappiness within New York State. The COVID lockdowns, the black market that has occurred, not only in weed, but also in fentanyl, also in labor, also in products and services, in all those things, that's been the damage that you're speaking of specifically. That's been the idea of laying off people, now stores that are now locked out, people not being able to get their help for being addicts, people not being able to get their help for mental illness. Those are all the issues. The fact that it became legal is just happened at the same time. It's coincidence.
What do you foresee being the right treatment of people who may be enjoying cannabis or even using it for pain control but then get behind the wheel? What is the means by which we can speak to that issue and endangering the lives of
pedestrians? I think there are two things that we deal with. The first one is we already have laws about that, right? There are already laws against driving under the influence. Right, those laws should exist also for cannabis. The issue we have to do is we literally do this. It's grossly simple. And business, in this case, will take advantage of it. Simply let business know, hey, we have to find a way to test for cannabis in the bloodstream. We don't know how. And we will create a very simple thing. If you provide us with a way of doing it, we will buy lots of these machines.
Yeah.
And they will, right? We bought breathalyzers. That was for alcohol, right? We will buy these machines, whatever these machines are. Do that, and then what will happen? Companies will go, wait a minute, we can make a bunch of government money. Boy, do companies love guaranteed government money. Of course they do. But not just companies love it. Banks love it. They love to loan to companies that are going to get guaranteed government money. So once you say, we are going to do this, this is going to happen, here's the date when it's going to happen, I guarantee you will have 2, 3, or 4 options of companies coming by and saying, here is how you test for cannabis. And then you go through and you find the answer. Is there a percentage? Is there a blood cannabis alcohol content? I don't know what that is. I'm making this up. I have no idea. But that thing will happen. Whatever is the thing will create. Sure. And to be fair with you, we'll probably screw it up up front. We probably will because we won't know any better. But over the course of time, we'll get better. We are much better with drunk driving than we've ever been. We screwed up earlier. We're getting better. And we will get better with this, too.
So, in short, you're really saying to follow the protocols and the laws and regulations that are already in place with in respect to alcohol. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
The structure is already in place.
Details. Yeah, yes. I don't know the details of how one tests the level of, you know, how high are you. I don't know how one does that. But I don't have to know that. It's not required. People do know that. We'll figure it out, and we'll work from there.
That will instigate innovation, as you're suggesting.
Yes.
Which I
innovation once we have the leadership to do so. You're putting things simply again, and they don't have to be that complicated. You know, just things that affect us on a wide scale and have a big impact don't have to be complicated when it comes to legislation. Mr. Sharp, would there be major obstacles into bringing a bit of reform and change? What kind of an uphill battle would you have within the New York legislature getting these things simplified in a way that's good for us all?
Yeah, the issue here is it's a good and a bad thing. The bad thing is that our previous governor and current governor, they have made it to where they basically run everything. The reason why they created the Office of Cannabis Management is so they can control everything and not be responsible for anything. What happens is in all of these committees, it's a common thing done throughout all of New York. They create a commission or an office or something, and in that commission, they create five people. One person is picked by the Senate, one by the Assembly, and three by the governor. So the governor puts his three cronies in, and they do whatever he says, or he removes them. And the state assembly and the leaders of the assembly and the House, and the Senate get it, so they can be, you know, rewarded by the governor also. It's all system patronage. Now, what happens in New York State is if that office creates a rule or regulation, and the legislature doesn't vote it down, I think it's 90 days or 60 days, I forgot the number, whatever time it is, that basically becomes a law. That's unconstitutional, but that's how New York State does it. So now when it happens, there's no recourse. In other words, the legislature didn't do it. It's not a law. So you have no recourse. They make a rule, you're screwed. That happens throughout all of New York State. That's the bad news. The good news is if I'm the governor, I just change them. None of them are laws. That's the rule. I just go, okay, you three guys are fired. Here are my three people. I'm going to put David and Mitchell on. They're going to change the rules, and we're done. So it's bad that we have this system. But it is also good for change. So if I'm in charge, I just put my people in there and I change it back. And literally we just make the rules. The rules and regulations aren't set yet. The Office of Cannabis Management will do the details. When I put my people in, the details will be things like this. The amount, what it costs you for a license is zero. You are automatically given a license unless you are like a convicted mass murderer or something. Right? That's it. You are given a license. Done. So I'll change that rule. So basically it'll become no licensing because it'll be automatic license. So we'll do things like that. Yes.
This is a fresh air, Mr. Sharp. Totally a breath of, or a toke of fresh air, if you will. Although this is going to be a pun-filled interview. What can I tell you, folks?
There's no question about it that it should be legal and allowed to be grown by anyone, anywhere, anytime, as long as it's within their own
agreed. Well, so the reason why I jump on this is because all of your rights matter all of the time, whether they affect me or not. And I have to be the person. If I'm going to say I'm going to be the leader, my job is to make sure that you have the rights that you want to use when you want to use them, as long as, to your point perfectly, as long as it doesn't hurt others. If you're not others, do you? I'm totally okay with that, whether I do it or not. I don't have to like your biggest right. In fact, in theory, I could think cannabis is, you know, not a good idea. I mean, I don't think that, but I could. I would still be like, you know what? If you want to do it, go ahead. As long as there is transparency, to your point, knowing that it isn't perfect, that there are some issues that you have to be worried about, let that be obvious and you know it, and you make a decision how you see, you know, appropriate.
Amen.
Spoken like a true libertarian. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I think some of our listeners are going to be very enthused with what you're saying about what you're saying here as a candidate about cannabis. So with this conversation continuing and this way of looking forward, I think that the world of cannabis has some hope of not just changing and legalization in itself, but considering how we change, how we legalize.
Yes.
And we're learning from experience and from your insights and forward looking on this. Mitchell, is there anything you wanted to add to the topic before we bring it to a close?
Well, I am grateful that, Larry, you have taken on such an enormous task. I really am. I think it's great.
Larry Sharp, candidate for governor in New York, and Mitchell Rabin, co-host from A Better World Media at abetterworld.net.
Gentlemen, thank you. And to the listeners of America's Cannabis Conversation, keep looking forward and keep your ideas fresh. This is David Katzmeyer signing out for W420 Radio Network. Thank you.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation. W420RadioNetwork.com.